25 minutes to one. Well, Keith's certainly very excited about that furlough scheme. He elected to greet it with a snatch of the Hallelujah chorus there a moment ago, albeit, I suspect, by accident. Theo Usherwood is here to briefly talk us through the detail, and then we will return to the much more serious matter of Mistria.
Rishi Sunak, on his feet in the House of Commons, announcing that the furlough scheme, that's the original furlough scheme, which was set up back in March, where the government pays 80% of wages, is now going to be extended not just to the end of this current national lockdown on the 2nd of December, it's going to be extended all the way to the end of March.
Given this significant uncertainty, a worsening economic backdrop, and the need to give people and businesses security through the winter, I believe it is right to go further. So we can announce today that the furlough scheme will not be extended for 1 month. It will be extended until the end of March. Yay. The government will continue to help pay people's wages up to 80% of the normal amount. All employers will have to pay for hours not worked is the cost of employer NICs and pension contributions.
There have also been questions, James, about whether the support would also be extended to Scotland and to Wales and to Northern Ireland, given that there are various different measures which are coming to ends at different times. Rishi Sunak said that what was being announced today applied to the whole of the United Kingdom.
The furlough scheme was designed and delivered by the government of the United Kingdom on behalf of all the people of the United Kingdom, wherever they live. That has been the case since March. It is the case now and will remain the case until next March. It is a demonstration of the strength of the union. And an undeniable truth of this crisis, we have only been able to provide this level of economic support because we are a united kingdom. And I can announce today that the upfront guaranteed funding for the devolved administrations is increasing from £14 billion to £16 billion. This Treasury is, has been, and will always be the Treasury for the whole of the United Kingdom.
One very short point, James, of course, is that this announcement from Rishi Sunak gives Boris Johnson and Number 10 the ability to impose further national lockdown restrictions if it wants to, if it needs to, during the course of the rest of the winter.
Three thoughts. It's a U-turn. This is what Annalise Dodds was calling for all along. Two, why go into battle with Andy Burnham over £5 million and 67% when a week later you're announcing 80% for everybody in the country? And three, how do you greet this news if you've already been made redundant?
So, point one, it's the fourth rewrite of the Chancellor's winter economic plan. It's his 12th announcement in terms of funding support as a result of coronavirus. The second point kind of ties into the first point in that the point the Chancellor's, what the Chancellor's trying to say is that because the situation is always changing, and he actually said that in the House of Commons, with the situation worsening, they had hoped that this wouldn't be necessary. However, because the virus has got so much worse, particularly in the northwest and northeast of England, it is necessary, and therefore the government has acted. And then your third point, James, was
people have already been made redundant.
If you're left behind before, you're going to be left behind again.
But if, I mean, if you've been made redundant because people couldn't see beyond the end of the
course,
year.
That iteration of the job support scheme
was supposed to protect people from... And then people calculated that they'd be better off letting people go, so they've let people go.
And you will have... Yes, there's no help.
OK, well, better late than never,
as we often say.
What are you apologising for? Stay there. Ian is in Ashvale. Ian, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why does the Leader of the Opposition always ask six questions?
I could have to go away and look it up.
You're not allowed to look stuff up. For God's sake, there's only one rule on Mystery Hour, Theo.
Shouts at me.
Did you not know?
I didn't know.
Oh, flipping out. We queued this up. We spent months in production. We've been rehearsing it with Keith playing the role of Theo.
You're going to give me a little heads up.
We can't give you a heads up.
I'll just stay there.
You think you get special treatment on Mystery Hour? Sorry, Ian. This has all got a bit awkward, mate.
Yes, I see that.
All I will say, Ian, and I'm not allowed to look it up. I said I was going to go and look it up. All I would say is that the questions are proportionate to the size of to the size of the party. So the opposition leader gets six questions.
I totally appreciate that, but my...
I don't know the answer to the question,
Get him, Ian.
My question goes a little further than that. Is it a legal requirement that they ask six questions, or is it just that they get six questions? And if it's just because they get six questions, why do they always ask them? Because the sixth question just opens the door for an unrelated diatribe from the Prime Minister.
As we have established recently, it'd be funny if he didn't ask the sixth one. That'd shoot
his fox a bit, some weeks you ask six and some weeks you ask five.
So that's the real question here, is can Keir Starmer next week, because they listen particularly closely to the programme at the moment on both sides of the House of Commons, but I don't know whether they stay tuned for Mystery Hour, so we might be okay, we might have smuggled this one under the wire. Next week, can Keir Starmer just not ask his sixth question and therefore spare the nation the infliction of Johnson's latest
rant? Johnson would make it the fifth answer, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but he wouldn't know.
He wouldn't know.
So, oh, right.
Come on, Theo, keep up, mate.
Or he could do what Jeremy Corbyn did and just turn his sixth question into a rant against the
Prime Minister. But that's not what Ian is asking.
Just say it was another suggestion.
Right.
Well, I'm just going to go.
I'll leave it. He's having a mare here, Ian, isn't he? He's having an absolute mare, mate. I can only apologise.
James, I just wanted to say one more thing.
Go on.
Whirlybird.
What does that mean to me?
Well, when I was a kid...
That was the first remote control, radio control thing that you ever had?
Yeah, it was a helicopter.
That's right.
That went round and round and round in circles because it was on the end of a piece of wire.
Because it was on a wire. Well, you were very spoiled. You were very spoiled, Ian. We could only dream of whirlybirds in Kidderminster. None of that. You were in the home counties. Theo, look at those cameras in here, Theo. Creaky man. 12:41, Ian, great work.
It's a great
what would happen? It is a great question.
And I was just looking up just because I would like to know.
Out of curiosity. Actually, you could stay tuned and find out whether anybody else knows the answer. Andy's in Farnham. Andy, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Well, we're going to need some answers soon, so I don't want to alarm anybody, but I've got pages of questions here.
I've sort of got an answer.
No, not you. I'm politely giving my colleagues a little bit of a kick up the proverbials. Carry on. What's your question?
Okay, question is, so they've recently, done a study where they can put plants to sleep, so suggesting plants have a nervous system.
Really?
Yeah, okay. So... And plants can communicate with each other through their roots, trees, etc.
Yeah,
so
I've been reading about that a bit.
Can they feel pain?
There's a wonderful Roald Dahl Tales of the Unexpected about animals, not animals, about plants and trees. A bloke invents a machine that lets you hear plants, and I think the sound of one of a tree being chopped down is so awful that it sends him potty or something like that. I could have misremembered it. And it's not an answer to your question, but it's a cracking read. It really is. I'll put it on the board, mate, but if we get a proper answer to that, I'll give you the money myself. I mean, how would we know? And pain, as in some sort of discomfort of a physical sensation, seems highly unlikely. But as I say, if there is an answer, I will give you the money myself. 12:43 is the time. Take care, Andy. Ian's in Gatwick.
At UK Export Finance, we ensure that no viable UK export fails by providing government-backed finance and insurance. So if you want to expand into new markets, we can help you win contracts with attractive finance terms. If you've got an overseas order, we can help you fulfill it with a working capital loan. And if you're entering a challenging market, we can ensure that you get paid with the right insurance. We've helped hundreds of companies to win contracts, fulfill orders, and get paid.
To get the exporter's edge, search UK Export Finance.
Ian, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Ian.
Prime Minister's questions.
Oh, yes.
The leader of the opposition does not have to ask six questions.
Oh.
And in fact, Ed Miliband was notorious for only asking five because it meant that the Prime Minister couldn't deliver the final prepared flourish on the sixth question.
Qualifications? You're not the political editor of a national radio station, are you, by any chance, who would obviously know this stuff anyway because, that's my job.
There's an excellent book called Punch and Judy Politics, which is all about Prime Minister's questions and how they prep for it.
And it was, and Miliband did do that. I don't remember. So that's a beautiful answer. Round of applause for Ian.
Thank you.
Schooled.
Oh, Theo. Does that ring true with you? I don't remember it, actually, but it'd be an odd thing to...
I don't remember it. What I do remember Ed Miliband doing quite regularly was splitting his questions.
Well, that might have been.
So instead of asking six, he'd ask three and three.
But he avoided the last one because then the Prime Minister sometimes wouldn't be able to go off on that pre-prepared spiel. Christ, that's live radio for you, mate. That is live radio for you. Squeeze in one more. Steph's in Wimbledon. Steph, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's to do with dreams and why we see dreams or images while we are asleep. It's really all to do with the various sleep cycles and the way that your brain functions during those sleep cycles. So normally when you are dreaming, you tend to be in the phase of the sleep cycle, which is called rapid eye movement.
No, I know that. You're giving a correct answer to a different question. Because he wants to know simply why he can see stuff in dreams. And apart from people who have, I think, a condition called aphantasia, you can't see stuff when you're awake except with your eyes. So how can he see without his eyes when he's asleep is the question.
Because it's all the various neurological, it's all the various neurons in the brains that are firing.
So it's memory and
as images.
Yes. Well, that's what I thought, and I'll give you a round of applause. But maybe there isn't a better answer. It is just a combination of memory and neuroscience.
Yes, and right. I think you should give yourself a round of applause
No. I've got plenty. I've got cupboards full of them at home, Steph. You keep this one for yourself. There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Chancellor Rishi Sunak reintroduces the original furlough scheme until next March. I'll have all the details.
3 minutes after 12 is the time, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The number you need to get involved remains the same, 0345 60 60 973, and that's pretty much all you need to know. If you're not familiar with this feature, you're in for a bit of a surprise. It's rather different from the other 14 hours a week that we spend together, in that it is dedicated solely to exploring silliness and enlightenment. There's no news usually involved, although obviously I will reserve the right to bring any important information to you the moment it appears. If you've got a question, a who, a why, a what, a where, a when, a whither, even perhaps a wherefore, then ring in and ask it. And somebody else listening will hopefully know the answer. The only real rule is that you're not allowed to look stuff up, because that would make a mockery of proceedings. You know, if you hear someone ask a question, you're not allowed to Google it or go and grab your Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever your favourite reference may be. It's about celebrating. It always sounds a bit pompous, but hey-ho, in for a penny. It's a bit late now for me to stop worrying about sounding pompous. We kind of celebrate knowledge. I'm always conscious, watching my kids do their homework, that they've got everything at their fingertips. I mean everything, in a way that, as a man in his late 40s, it's still... I told my 12-year-old the other day that when I got a digital watch, because we were looking at Apple Watches in Currys. That's incredible, that. I sound so old when I start talking about technology. Keith, you don't have to nod that vigorously. But I got a Casio digital watch for my 8th birthday, and do you know what the feature was that made us all excited?
Calculator.
Everyone always says calculator. Mate, no. 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 The thing that all the lads at school, and you'd be like, have you got one? Did you get one? And you'd go, yeah. Look, one lad, Higgins, I think his name was, I think he got the one with the calculator. But that was beyond my wildest dreams. What did it have? So I'm trying to explain to my 12-year-old daughter, who's looking at phones that you can ring America with them. Yeah, a light. Yeah, there was a little button on the side of it. So we'd all get in the desk. You remember the old wooden desks with inkwells? So get your head in there and put a jumper over the top and press the little button on the side of the desk.
Martin here runs his own building business. He's got a tool for everything. Nail gun for nails, screwdriver for screws, and QuickBooks for finances. QuickBooks makes doing his tax return easy, automatically checking for the most common errors. Martin hardly has to lift a finger. Well, maybe one.
Visit quickbooks.co.uk for details. Intuit QuickBooks.
Oh my God, it lights up, lads! It lights up! It's 9:43 and 17 seconds! A light. I'm 48. How long ago was this? 40 years ago. Oh my life. And now, you know, you can wrap something around your wrist that contains more technology than the entire school did when I was that age. The entire school. I had a Commodore PET in the computer lab, as it was laughably called. presumably because if they called it a computer cupboard, they wouldn't have been able to charge the sort of school fees that they charge. So it's a computer lab. Now they've got more. Anyway, I digress slightly. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. They've got all the stuff at their fingertips, you see. You don't need to memorise divorced, beheaded, annulled, divorced, beheaded, died, or anything like that, do you? Or whatever it is. I forget. The point is they've got it all there. And this is a little bit of nostalgia for the days when you needed to know stuff. So you ask a question and someone else will hopefully ring in with the answer. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. It's 12:07. James is in Shoreditch. James, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Question, please.
Carry on.
So who first theorised the water cycle? Or who first, was it, do we know? Was it a person or was it just, you know, did the ancient Greeks know about the water cycle?
By water cycle, you mean from sky to land to sky again? And
yeah,
to land again.
Cycle, yeah.
No, I'm not being dumb. I just wasn't quite clear what you meant. Mate, I'm a bloke who's impressed by a light on a watch. I know you can't take it as a given that I'm going to know what the water cycle is. So yeah, we did it in geography at school, where you get the evaporation upwards and then the rain comes down. So who worked out that there was a water cycle first?
Yeah, I mean, caveman could have been sort of like looking at the mist across the water, seeing it go up.
Yeah.
Looking at the clouds, going, oh, wonder if that's the same thing.
I don't know why. I often say Sumerians at this point in proceedings, but I'm not even sure where that is or indeed when that was, that particular civilization. The Egyptians, you'd think someone would have worked it out. I shall find out for you, or at least I shall try to find out for you. I can't make any promises. I like that question, James.
Someone might have written it down, mightn't
they? Someone must have done it. It must have been explained for the first time. The mystery is whether or not anyone listening to this programme will be aware of it, and we're about to find out. 0345. 60 60 973. Stuart's in Surbiton. Stuart, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question, please.
Go on.
Why is it called the Royal Air Force and the Royal Navy, but it's not called the Royal Army? It's actually called the British Army.
Because the army is a collection of regiments, many of which are royal. I think. So I think that's the answer, actually.
So why collectively though? If you thought
no,
like,
I know that. I mean, I don't know if there's an answer to that question, but because they're a collection of individual units, they're not like the Navy and the RAF. So they're not called Royal. But whereas you have the Royal Fusiliers or the Royal Engineers, I'll try and find out further.
Okay.
But that is going to be the bones of the answer right there. I think because I just remember that from popping up before. 9 minutes after 12, who discovered the water cycle? Who first described the water cycle? And why do we have a Royal Air Force and a Royal Navy, but not a Royal Army? And you need to go further than the regiment's answer that I just provided. Jack's in Woking. Jack, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Yes.
I would like to know, how do babies know how to dance? It seems to be inbuilt in them that they have rhythm, whether you turn music on or not in their infancy. All my babies are known how to dance, and I wonder how that is. Have we got rhythm built into us? I just wonder what that is.
Well, we need to define dancing here, I think, don't we, Jack?
Well, they stop in their tracks when we put music on at home, and they start wiggling and dance in their own little way. They don't all dance the same, but they all have their little dance.
That'd be boring.
It seems to be inbuilt into them.
How old are they?
6 months and about just coming up for two. But
so we're talking about recognising rhythm rather than dancing.
Exactly.
They kind of move in time with the music in some way.
Yeah, it stops them in their tracks and they start having a little groove and a little dance, and it seems to be inbuilt as babies from them being born that they can dance. And I'm just wondering, where does that come from?
Because it's not learned behaviour. You're not moonwalking around the kitchen encouraging them to do this sort of thing, are you?
No way.
No.
No, it's completely on their own accord, and they seem to stop and have a dance to the music, and that just seems to be the only thing that I find that naturally it comes to them and they have rhythm and they love
to dance. I mean, unless you've got genius kids, because I can't remember this from my own days of roughly where you are time-wise, but I think it sounds familiar. I can't remember it specifically.
They dance in their own ways, swaying.
No, I know they're not. They're not doing a paso doble. They're not coming over all Brendan Cole or anything like that, or Anton Dubek. But there is, yeah, you're right. There is a response to music that is physical and rhythmic, and therefore close to dancing. I like that question. I like all of them today. The water cycle, the Royal Army, or rather the not Royal Army, and now babies. And music. How do they learn? Do they learn it, or are they born that way? Because I think Jack and I are leaning towards the conclusion that must be innate rather than learned behaviour. That the music plays, and the baby sways. I'm a poet, and I don't know it. Cameron's in Leeds. Cameron, question or answer?
Hi, James. A massive fan. It's a question.
Thank you, Cameron.
So, when you dream and you've got your eyes closed, where do the images come from in your dream? Because you're not using your eyes.
Yeah, but you don't. Your eyes send messages to your brain, yeah. And your brain sees the images, not your eyes. So you don't need to have your eyes open to see stuff. It'd be sending stuff. Your subconscious is sending messages to your brain,
If I'm awake and I close my eyes, I don't see anything. So when I'm asleep. So you
kind of do. You know, you don't see anything like as clearly as you do in a dream, but you do. Mm. You can imagine things when your eyes are closed.
So so those images when you're dreaming, they're not coming from your eyes. Am I explaining it well?
No, I think you're explaining it right, and one of us is barking up a slightly different tree from the other. Don't bring ears into it, for heaven's sake, Cameron. Struggling with the eyes. If I said it comes from your memory, would that help or not? No, because you'd say when I'm awake, I can't drag stuff up from my memory. But that's why dreaming is different from being awake.
It doesn't answer my question, so I'm hoping there's somebody out there that can.
Yeah, all right, mate. Don't rub it in. I'm doing my best. Everyone's a critic.
Can I mention ears to just clarify it?
Oh, go on then.
So it's the same when you hear people in your dreams.
Yes.
Your ears aren't working, are they? So how do you hear them?
Yeah. I mean, again, it would be a combination of memory and subconscious, but I wouldn't accept that as a definitive answer, so I don't see any reason why you should.
Okay.
12:14. Cameron, thank you for the kind words. Look after yourself. So we've got the water cycle, we've got the babies, and we've got how can you see in your dreams when you can't see with your eyes closed when you're awake? And that might need a little bit more explanation or expansion, but I think intuitively we can feel Cameron's question. Memory and subconscious is my answer. It almost certainly is going to need a little bit more than that. And why is the army the only one of the armed forces that is not royal? Why do babies respond to music? Is it innate? And who first described or discovered the water cycle? It's coming up to 12:15. I think we can squeeze in one more. Mark is in Swindon. Mark, question or answer?
Hello, James. Question.
Hello, Mark. Carry on.
So there's 31 or 30 days in all other months. Why is there 28 in February? I know there's 29 on a leap year where there's 28th
come
from in February.
They nicked a day from February to put on other months. So when Julius Caesar wanted July to have an extra day, they got it from February. And when Augustus Caesar wanted August to have an extra day, he got it from February as well.
Okay, why February?
Why February? That's not what you asked. You're only allowed one question.
Oh, okay.
And also, I don't know the answer to the second question. If I did, I probably wouldn't have been able to resist the urge to show off. And I may have got the first one wrong, but it's definitely got something to do with the redistribution of days under the so-called Julian calendar. So the emperors nicked a day. So they couldn't, like, add a day to the whole year. They had to divvy up the days differently to reflect the month that was named after them, and that's how they ended up. I think this is right, but do you know what? For the first time in recorded history, I'm not going to award myself a round of applause. I'm going to leave it on the board. And I might even throw in a why February. What did February do wrong? Why did February get it? Why was February the one that got picked on by the nasty emperors? Give me an extra day. It's like nicking their dinner money, but in a sort of Roman imperial calendar context. Lovely question, Mark. It's 12:16. A lot of love for Casio watches coming in from the generations closest to mine. Scott Balcony says, I was a kid at school with the Casio that was solar powered, and we all wet ourselves. I'm too old to, I don't remember the one that had a TV remote control in it. And you've got to remember that I'm of an age. Do you remember that? You're a bit younger than me, Keith. Quite a bit younger than me, actually. But but I'm of an age where my first remote control car that my mate got wasn't a remote control car at all. It had a wire attaching the controllers to the car. You had to follow it around the room. The first truly independent vehicle I can remember was called Big Track. But that didn't have a remote control. That had a pad on top where you programmed go forward 5, turn left. I never had any of these toys as a kid. Looking back, I realised that the sacrifices Mum and Dad made to send my sister and I to private school were huge in the context of wondering as children why we didn't get stuff that some of our mates got. Never. I won 100 quid on premium bonds when I was about 10, and I felt like Richie Rich. I really did. Mustafa Millions in Whizzer and Chips. I went out, I bought a dropped handle, but my dad used to call them drop handle. I bought a proper racer from Woolworths, you know, with the curvy handlebars, the ones, the little miniature racer from, and I bought a game called Tin Can Alley. And there is a moment in everyone's life, if you're lucky enough to be loved and happy as a child, there are moments of pure happiness, aren't there, that never leave you completely. So getting that Casio watch and then getting that Tin Can Alley and a proper drop handled bar racing. Sorry, I don't know what's happened. I've gone off on a bit of a mad one. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour continues. Nostalgia Hour is now over. Paul is in Edmonton. Paul, question or answer?
A question, James.
Carry on.
I just want to find out, at what point in human history, considering Adam and Eve were born...
Let's not start with that controversy. UK, crack on.
At what point did we start using surnames? Because we knew that Adam and Eve didn't have surnames, but then if they were born or created... At what point do we start using the surnames, and who was that first person?
It's not all. I mean, some cultures still don't, you know. The surnames wouldn't be the correct way to describe some cultures. But in cultures where they do exist, it would... I mean, you're going back at least 1,000 years. I don't know the proper answer, but I've got the memories of someone else's answer to this question. Involving, because right. You know that most surnames help identify you. So some of us are named after the tribes to which we used to belong. In my case, Brian Boru, the sort of last true king of Ireland, any O'Brien in all its various permutations.
Right.
It would have been identified as belonging to his tribe. If you're called Fletcher or Miller, it's a reflection of the job that you used to do. But I don't think your question is answerable because of the absence of records. So until people started writing things down, it, you know...
We have records. I mean, if you go back to the Bible...
I don't think the Bible is going to help you here, if you don't mind me saying so, on the question of surnames, because you would have Joseph, son of Jacob, and son of Jacob in the context of O'Brien is actually a surname, you see.
Right.
Because O'Brien means son of Brian in a way. And so Joseph, son of Jacob, would be, in a way, it would be a surname.
Right. So across the world, we cannot find who or where it came about.
I imagine it came about with the invention of writing, with the invention of records. But I don't know. I don't even know why I'm trying to answer this. It's a great question. I'll leave it on the board. When did we start using surnames? Do we even know? And the first recorded incidence of surnames or the first recorded record of surnames? It's probably the same thing. Paul, great question. Thank you. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. Stefan is in Maidstone. Stefan, question or answer?
Hello. It is a question.
Yes.
Do animals get headaches, so like cats and dogs and things, well, any animals, I guess, do they get headaches?
I know what an animal is.
Yeah. And how do we know if they get headaches?
Yeah, I like that question. Because you go trying to think, we lost a pet this week and probably not ready
to
talk about it.
Don't,
yet, but,
don't, don't. Yeah.
But you can, you can get some diagnoses very easily, can't you? Because there'll be vomit or there'll be blood or there'll be... But with a headache, you have to presume all mammals can get headaches, but how on earth would you...
I don't really know what a headache is, to be honest. Like, what I know, like, stress can cause it and stuff, but, like, medically speaking, like, what is that pain, you know?
It's something to do with blood flowing around the brain, I think. I'm not sure either. I'll find out for you. Can animals get headaches? And, I mean, do we know is the answer, really. And if we do know that they can, then the question of how we can know will be part of the answer to the original question. 25 minutes after 12, let me remind you of some of the questions on the board. The water cycle, as in, you know, comes down as rain, goes back up again as vapour, and then comes back down again as rain. The water cycle. What's the first recorded incidence of that? Why have we got a Royal Navy and a Royal Air Force, but not a Royal Army? I know that. There's a second bit to the answer that I forgot, but it's just popped into my head as I read it out there. Do babies recognise rhythm from the moment of birth, or even before, given that many mothers report babies apparently moving in response to music when they're even in the womb? Why can we see in our dreams? How come we can see stuff in our dreams when there is no other circumstance when we are awake in which we can see as if our eyes were open when they're not? Do animals get headaches? And if they do, how do we know? What was the other one?
February.
I'm pretty sure it had something to do with emperors divvying up the days so that they could have their own months looking bigger than other months. But why did they take them from February? And when did surnames become a thing? Crikey, there's a lot to get through here. Let's go to Victoria, who's in Stansted. Victoria, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Splendid, carry on.
I recently read a paper.
Get you.
I know. It's all to do with neurons and neuroscience. And as a baby develops its fine motor skills and its ability to pick up language and learn to crawl and sit up, the rhythm is all part of that. So our auditory and our motor systems, they are believed to be inextricably intertwined. So they will start to sway with the rhythm as the electrons are emitted from their brain, that preparation to crawling, and expressing rhythm is just part, it's just evidence of their development.
Okay.
And they've given the study that they're, you know, working on is called Action Simulation for Auditory Prediction.
Why were you reading a paper on this? I've got a book out, you know.
Just waiting to get some, results from the American election and just reading interesting things that interesting people send to me.
Certainly a round of applause.
Wow.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Look at that. Happy days. It's downhill now, you know, for the rest of the day. 28 minutes after 12. Thank you, Victoria. Philip's in Bracknell. Philip, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Yours.
I've got a rough idea how soap and shampoo work.
They
contain things that break down fat and oil. But how does conditioner work?
Well, it adds a bit of oil, doesn't it?
I don't know, does it?
Yeah.
Bit of an assumption.
What do you mean a bit of an assumption?
Well, your qualifications?
I am a trained hairdresser.
Maybe you should go back to that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing all right as a radio presenter at the moment. I've got a book out as well, you know, cheeky baby. It's just a hoax. I haven't really. It does. I'm pretty sure it has. The reason I know.
I think you're floundering a bit.
I'm not floundering. I am floundering, obviously, but I don't think I'm floundering in quite the way that you think I'm floundering, because I think I'm right. I just can't prove it. And the reason I think I know is because of the challenges I have with my children's hair when it's my turn, if we're on holiday or something like that, and one of them's managed to get things knotty. Then I've got all sorts of stuff. I've got frizzies, I've got tangled stuff that you can buy in Trotters, and you get it. And it is greasy. And that is obviously what you're doing. You're making it smooth and silky. by adding a little bit of grease or oil. But I can't prove it. And you're obviously a very sceptical and cynical individual who isn't going to accept my answer in good faith based on my reputation for truth-telling and decency and honesty.
No, I'd be foolish to do so.
Well, caveat emptor. We shall find out for you, Philip. Conditioner. How does it work, eh? 03456060973. Time now for the very latest news headlines with Bill Overton. 12:50 is the time, and Sheila will be picking over every dot and cross of Rishi Sunak's new old furlough scheme in approximately 10 minutes' time. You can rest assured as well that all of us here on LBC will bring you any news from America as Joe Biden edges ever closer to the White House as and when it happens. It's not as easy as it sounds either, that. I just looked up Georgia on your behalf, and the first story to appear was Love Island's Georgia Harrison brags about avoiding lockdown on Maldives getaway. So it's not as easy as we make it look. Us LBC presenters, you know, we have to sort the wheat from the chaff before sharing it with you. I'm also very bad at keeping an eye on my inbox, which means I nearly missed this from Dee in Warrington. She says, can we please have another prayer for Theo? I feel sorry for him. Well, your wish is my command.
I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of shouting and singing. I hear a sound of victory. Tanda ata ambo osa kata rite eke banda ata rike didi ashata. For angels have even been dispatched from Africa right now. Africa right now. Africa right now. From Africa right now. They're coming here. They're coming here. In the name of Jesus, from South America. They're coming here. They're coming here.
That is Donald Trump's spiritual advisor leading what is described as a prayer service. And I don't know whether I can prove to you, if you've just tuned in, that I'm telling the truth, but I am. 12:51 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Ewan is in Burton-on-Trent. Ewan, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on.
Why is it not the Royal Army? The Army is much older, was not always raised by the Crown, and so that's why you've got units like Staffordshire Regiment.
Yes.
Whereas the Navy...
Raised by the Crown is the phrase I was looking for, isn't it?
Yes.
That's perfect.
And then the
put.
Navy and subsequently the Air Force have always been one cohesive unit in their own right, raised by the Crown, and then have been given that royal in their name.
In fact, the Civil War springs to mind. I don't know whether that would be relevant or not, but the idea of, you know, some regiments being royalist and others being parliamentarian, the idea that the army that emerged subsequently would be one or the other is unlikely, isn't it?
Not sure myself. I know,
no,
for example,
don't
the Royal Engineers are obviously given it as an award, and so various units and regiments are awarded the royal title.
Qualifications?
Army reservist.
Beautifully done. Round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ewan. Here's a nice little fact for fans of Hamilton, a musical I've fallen in love with during the last lockdown. If the American election were to finish on 269 votes each, it would go through to the House of Representatives, where the Democrats, I think, have a majority. And I, according to this from Shane, who's in Woking, the last time that happened was in the year 1800, when Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, sir, had tied on. I don't know if that's true. I've got no reason to doubt what Shane is telling me, but I haven't double-checked it. And it's Aaron Burr, sir. Only if you've watched Hamilton a few times do you find it impossible to resist the urge to add sir on the end of Aaron Burr. Sir! Gah! Damn! Tried to stop that one. Aaron Burr, sir. Jonathan's in Ashford. Jonathan, question or answer?
I've got one answer, but more if you need them.
No, only the one you've cleared with the producer, please.
Okay, that's
Thank
fine, because I'm trying to help out, because I had a question, but it's now an answer about
Carry
plants.
On. Oh, yes.
So plants have obviously been the main food source on our planet for a long time, so they've had to develop what is now described as a diffuse nervous system.
Okay.
Because if they're being eaten at one branch, they couldn't cope with the level of pain in the other, but they will communicate both within the plant itself and to other plants that they're being eaten by an insect, a herbivore, a parasite,
really?
Whatever is attacking them. And that's where the communication comes in that the caller was referring to. They'll communicate with pheromones. They'll communicate via the root systems. They'll release chemicals from their roots, from their leaves.
So they wouldn't feel pain, but they would communicate it.
That they are aware that they're being eaten. But they couldn't possibly feel pain because they're being eaten on a much too regular basis.
Yes.
They would never have
evolved in the way that they evolved if it hurt them when we bite them.
Correct. And in fact, there was a science fiction book from the 70s where humans were predated on by plants, which wasn't very nice.
Well, the John Buck, the Day of the Triffids.
No, it's an even more obscure one than that. But, okay. But that was a reverse of the thing. And also, in the 60s, the Russians, who were considered nutty, did a lot of work on plant neurobiology.
Well, I never.
And they also discovered there may be electrical conductivity taking place, possibly between plants, but definitely from, you know, when you bite a tomato,
yes,
it screams. It will release pheromones. It will release, its cells go into overdrive in sort of desire to save itself from, or at least to let, if I've got...
I get it. Beautiful answer. What are your qualifications, Jonathan?
Well, they're not really... I mean, I am a basic horticulturalist.
No, but how do you know this? Where did you pick up this knowledge?
A general knowledge plus a very clever daughter who's studying ecology at Oxford, that one.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Jonathan, although I suppose technically he should send some of it to his daughter in Oxford. 12:55 is the time, perhaps in the form of a care package. John's in Fairlop. John, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's the extra day in February.
No, that's not what the question was, mate. The question was, why does February only have 28 days, not why does it sometimes have 29?
I can tell you why the extra day's there.
Well, I know why the extra day's there.
Why's that?
They've got to balance it out every 4 years because the circuits that the Earth makes around the sun are not as perfect as our clock would have us believe.
Yeah, it's 365.25 days.
There you go.
So,
well, I'm going to give you a round of applause, but we can't make a habit of this, John. You can't ring in to answer different questions and then expect a round of applause. I'm only giving it to you because you're such a nice man.
Thank you very much indeed.
You're very welcome indeed. Roy's in Ivor. Roy, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's an answer. It concerns hair conditioners and fabric softeners.
Oh, yes.
You mentioned about leaving a waxy film, but it's actually quite the opposite.
Oh.
They contain a surface active agent, or surfactant, which leaves a very mild positive charge on the fibre or the hair. And as we know from magnets, as you were a kid, positive charges repel one another. So each of the fibres, or your hairs, then repel one another. So it gives it, the fabric or your hair, a nice feeling. It doesn't leave any sort of waxy thing on there. Really?
What about silicons? Someone sent me word silicons a lot. It sounded relevant. Is that not...
No.
What about Macassar?
Yeah, well, no, that's totally the opposite.
That is a hair oil, but that's not a conditioner.
Yes. In the solutions that are applied to your car at the end of the car wash to make it bead, all of the water bead on the surface, so that the air blower can then blow the water off and leave your car nice and dry.
What a beautiful answer. What are your qualifications, Roy?
I just used to work in the industry and sell the stuff.
What do you mean, I just used to work in the industry and sell? That's the best qualification you could possibly have.
Yeah. Anyway, James, thanks for taking my call.
Hang on.
I listen to you every day.
God bless you.
You sound like me when you give out your opinions. That's great.
And that's the highest compliment you could pay me, Roy. Am I right?
Okay.
Round of applause for Roy. Thank you. 12:58 is the time, and Vieri, Dr. Dog, is here to tell us, I presume, about whether or not animals can get headaches. You've got less than a minute. Knock yourself out, yeah, Vieri.
I had a headache thinking about it. Yes, they can. We don't know whether they do it or not because they never told us, because unfortunately they still can't speak. But you can imagine that mammals will get the same kind of a reaction to a headache as we do. So they show pain, they bang their head around the corner, and all these things. So mammals, very likely, yes, because they're a very similar neurological system and blood system as we do.
Yeah.
Insects and fish, don't know. Probably, yeah.
But definitely mammals was the question. So round of applause for Vieri. And you can find out more Vieri's work in the field of animal behaviourism by, Googling him, really. Dr. Dog is the name under which he works. And the final word of the day goes to Helen, who's been in touch. And we've obviously caused her some quite profound trauma. She says, OMG, at Mr. James O'B, I'm just chopping up tomatoes and now I'm imagining them screaming in pain. What a shame we haven't got time to offer up a little prayer. That's it from me for another day. Here's Sheila Fogarty.